And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, last time we spoke, we were talking about the Pennsylvania primary, and this last week, of course, there was the Georgia primary. Georgia's on our mind. There's a lot happening. We want to see if the trends that people are talking about are holding up in the vote and what the vote so far seems to indicate. So let's get into Georgia a little bit, and then we can maybe look around at some other states where there were things happening. But it looks like Trump, at the top of the ticket, suffered a big setback in Georgia. Although, down the line, I'm not sure he suffered any setback at all.
Well, you know, with Trump, it's always heads I win, tails you lose. He's been trying to maintain his grip on the Republican Party, primarily through these threats that if you don't toe his line, not the party line, his line, that he will oppose you and do you devastating damage. And to some extent, it's worked. For instance, many of the those Republican congressmen who voted for impeachment after the insurrection, I think there were like nine of them, and five of them have already pulled out or not going to be in Congress or whatever, just under the threat of what's happening. But, in Georgia, that's been particularly a spot that gained Trump's focus because of what happened last time when he tried to rig the election by calling the Secretary of State there, Brad Raffensperger, who had the foresight or the wherewithal to record the conversation. He only asked for the 11,780 votes that he needed. And when he didn't get it, he attacked the governor for certifying the election, Brad Kemp, and he attacked Raffensperger. And both of them were on the ticket this time. And Trump actually helped recruit former Senator David Perdue, who was a big name in Georgia, to run against Kemp. And the effort was a complete and utter failure. The issue was not loyalty to Trump here. It was the job that Kemp had done as governor. And Kemp won this election by over 50 points. He got almost three quarters of the vote. So that was a defeat for Trump. But I think that the more significant defeat was the Raffensperger defeat for Secretary of State. Trump's been going around the country, and Republicans have been going around the country trying to put in place secretaries of state. Those are the people who count and certify the vote in each state try to replace them with or place into those offices people who believed Trump's big lie and that would not certify a result other than Donald Trump winning the state. And in Georgia, he had Raffensperger. And Raffensperger won outright. You know, Georgia's one of these 50-plus-1 states. If you don't get that, you have a runoff. And Raffensperger got in the low 50s. He defeated his nearest component by close to 20 points. The only thing is he had about a 20-point drop-off from Kemp, but it doesn't matter. There's not going to be a Secretary of State in Georgia who's going to do Donald Trump's bidding. That's the bigger thing. You know, in other states, Trump was a little bit more successful, although in the neighboring state of Alabama, he had endorsed Mo Brooks, who spoke at the January 6th gathering, and then he unendorsed him, and then Brooks managed to make it into the playoffs, so to speak, into the nobody got 50%, so they're going to have a runoff. This is what's happening. You know, we also had, the Texas vote, the Texas situation. this week, which perhaps focused more on Democrats than on Republicans. But in, the one Republican race was for Attorney General with Ken Paxton. And his opponent in the runoff was a guy named George P. Bush, Jeb's son. And, of course, we know what Trump did to Jeb in the primary running for president in 2016 and the bitterness that that's left the Bush family with. But George P. decided that his political ambition exceeded his family's reputation and kissed up to Trump and tried to do everything to get Trump's endorsement, all to no avail. Paxton got it, and Paxton beat him. You know, as I keep saying, and we keep observing here, the loyalty with Trump is only one way. And no matter how much you kiss up to him, if he doesn't think you've been sufficiently loyal, he does nothing for you and will even work against you. I think the question, getting back to Georgia, is what is the consequence going to be in the general election? Because don't forget, Trump's antics after the 2020 election cost them both seats of the Senate, cost them control of the Senate, when he turned enough Republican voters off that allowed the Democrats to win, Raphael Warnock and Jonathan Ostroff.
So now you have an election for Senate in Georgia where Warnock has to run for re-election because he only took an interim appointment, right? He didn't get a full 6 years. He got just the 2 years. And he's running against Herschel Walker.
Right. Who did get Trump's endorsement. But that's one of the things that Trump does. You know, he picks someone who is already ahead in the polls and, you know, is almost a certain winner. And in that case, that's what happened. Herschel Walker being a great football star for the University of Georgia many years ago. So he had great name recognition. He had the celebrity. Trump also picked celebrities.
Well, if you look at Trump's endorsement across the board, you know, because he claims he's been so successful, and in his endorsement means victory. But 2/3 of the people he endorsed in the Republican primary were unopposed. He couldn't lose.
Yeah, but, you know, those are the details that you don't get below the headline.
No, I know that. I know that.
And that's all he cares about is the headlines. Remember, what got him impeached the first time was when he told the president of Ukraine, you know, just announce that you're doing an investigation of Joe Biden.
Right.
I don't care what you do it or not. He just wants the headline. And
right.
He just keeps repeating it.
Right.
He's a master at that.
In Pennsylvania, we had a candidate, Kathy Barnett, who ran third for the Senate nomination.
Right.
And she made an interesting point. Now, Kathy Barnett is an extremely right-wing politician. And her point was, Trumpism goes beyond Trump. The MAGA movement is not Donald Trump. The MAGA movement goes beyond Donald Trump. And I think that she was right, and she is right. I think that you have secretaries of state, people in charge of elections, being elected in various states on the Republican ticket, who are prepared not necessarily to go along with Trump's insane blathering about having won the 2020 election, but who are prepared to say, we're not going to lose any other election because we'll appoint the electors. And that I think, is what we're seeing nationwide.
Yeah. What's happened, and I think she's right, and I think you're right to point this out, is that Trump is no longer at the front of the MAGA movement. He's somewhere back in the pack. The pack has outrun him. There's a good example of that was when, I forget where it was, a couple of months ago, he started making a speech about getting vaccines or something, the crowd booed.
Yeah, I think there was at a rally in Texas, as a matter of fact, or it might have been Arizona. It was one of the two.
Yeah, and he quickly backed off.
Yeah.
You know, what's happened, you know, it's like a mob that the people who have started the mob can't control it anymore.
Not like a mob. It is a mob.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a bloodlust.
Yeah.
That's. Yeah. I mean, it's the way lynch mobs work. It's the same thing.
Well, that was what they, they were asking for on January 6th with Mike Pence.
That's exactly right.
You know,
that's exactly right. And now it turns out that, speaking about that, that when the people were yelling, and it was being shown on television that the people were yelling, "Hang Pence," Trump, watching it on television, was cheering that on.
Yep, because he thought this would be good for him.
Yep.
You know,
hang Mike Pence, right?
There's some interesting aspects to that. They were, if they'd gotten to Pence and they'd gotten, or to Pelosi. But I think mostly Pence. I think Trump's mind was, and we've heard it, I think, in Mark Esper's book that came out, that if they try to hang Pence, or they actually did hang Pence, he would have had a pretext to declare martial law. And I don't think he would have hesitated in doing that. Because he's, again, he's all about nothing but raw power, not the rule of law in anything. So I think that was a major point of it. It's interesting, Mike Pence, of course, is out there, and he supported Brian Kemp. He's been slowly breaking with Trump without fully breaking with Trump. But, Mike Pence is no profile in courage on anything.
Mike Pence has as much chance of being the Republican nominee as you do. who's going to support him? The real Trumpists hate him. They hate him, right?
Yeah.
The anti-Trumpists hate him. Who's left?
I think that vestige of the Republican Party, that conservative vestige that still seeks to obscure their real agenda, and not be as open about the racism or things like that. But it's a very small, it is a shrinking portion of the party. They ain't there anymore.
To paraphrase John Kennedy, Pence is a profile in cowardice.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he always was, and he has this, he's perfected this patina of rectitude and moderation. I think, he was a radio commentator, and the softness of his voice and the look on his face, those kind of things. He never gets riled. It's all,
he was a failed governor. He was not going to be able to get reelected. Everybody knew that. The vice presidential nomination was a lifeline for his political career. He has no more political career. On his own, nothing.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with that. I agree with that. But meanwhile, the Democrats have some issues as well that are coming out.
Well, the Democrats have, we talked about this earlier, the Democrats have a deep philosophical issue about what kind of a party do they want. Now, Biden, Pelosi, that group of people who dominate the Democratic Party talk about the big tent, Clyburn, the big tent. The Democrats should be the big tent. And, of course, the Democrats have a history of the big tent, even back in FDR's days. The New Deal was, after all, a big tent. It was a coalition between the Southern racists and the Northern progressives. A coalition. They were together. Some coalition. But the question is whether that's possible today, where the Republicans have a unified leadership, whether it's Trump is doing it or Trumpists are doing it, maggots are doing it. But it's a unified leadership. It's a unified program, even if they don't bother to issue a program. But we all know it's racism and imperialism. That's their program. Corporatism, imperialism, racism. That's what they stand for, no matter how they disguise it. And it's the same in every district.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by imperialism, because certainly they become isolationist in many ways. They're that wing of the party voted against package of aid for the Ukraine, for Ukraine. And there was an article the other day in the New York Times talking about how the Heritage Foundation, which had been a very staunch, hawkish movement, had been at the forefront of that happening. I think the libertarianism is more showing there.
The libertarianism stands in the way of the imperialist agenda. But the fact is, the point that Trump was making with his trade deals, with his tariffs, was that the United States corporations should have untrammeled sway wherever they want to have untrammeled sway. Well, that's imperialism.
Economic imperialism.
Economic imperialism, right. But it doesn't work without political and military domination. That's imperialism. It's not colonialism. American imperialism was never colonialism, except in Puerto Rico and in the Philippines and in Guam. But it is imperialism. That's the tradition of it. And that's their policy. Without saying it, that's their policy. Now, the question is, how do the Democrats challenge that? If one of the legs in which they disguise what they do is the culture war of anti-abortionism, how do the Democrats contain anti-abortionism and pro-abortion rights within the same organization? I don't see it's possible.
Well, if that becomes the litmus test, or a litmus test.
But it is a litmus test. The Republicans have made it a litmus test. You can't escape it. Maybe 30 years ago you could have hoped to escape it, but you can't escape it today.
I mean, there's that study that showed that, you know, maybe 40 years ago, if you did a Venn diagram with conservative Democrats and liberal Republicans, there was a fairly decent overlap in the diagram. And now the two diagrams barely touch. There is no overlap.
You, Mr. Casey, Senator Casey's father, could exist in the Democratic Party, but the current Casey can't exist on his father's platform in the Democratic Party, and he doesn't.
No, he's moved to a great extent.
Yeah. So then, how do you have a guy like Queller in the Democratic Party, the Texas congressman?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Queller's presence in the Democratic Party in Texas impacts the vote in New York, impacts the vote in Pennsylvania, impacts the vote in Illinois.
Well,
it's just
it
a fact.
Impacts where they have a very small margin to work with, but that's where they're at.
That's where they're at, exactly.
Right now, Cuellar is holding on by about 100 votes.
No, I understand that, but the point is, when in Cuellar's election, Clyburn went down there and campaigned for him. Pelosi endorsed him. Biden endorsed him. I think that's cutting off your nose to spite your face.
You know, there's that bias in I think, particularly in the Democratic Party, that we're going to support those who are already in office. And
well, isn't that the job of the Democratic Campaign Committee?
I don't need another AOC headache. You know, I've got enough with the five or six of them that are there. I don't need another one. I think that's her motivation there. You know, we had.
Yeah, that may be her motivation, but those people whom she hates were, and the progressive caucus to which they belong, were Biden's strongest supporters for his program. Without their support, Biden wouldn't have had anybody, because the conservative members of the big tent opposed the Build Back Better law and scuttled it. The support for it was with the progressive caucus. So it's a real contradiction. You're defending the people who are opposed to the thing that you think you need to do to stay in office. And you're opposing the people who support you in doing that. That's weird.
It's politics. It's politics. You know,
it's losing politics. It's not just politics. It's losing politics.
We have the same thing in Oregon with Kurt Schrader's.
Yeah, right. Healthcare is the big issue. Here's a guy who's financed by Big Pharma and who stands up for Big Pharma. Right. How can he be a Democrat?
And he got beat.
And he did get beat. That's right. But the woman who beat him again had to campaign against the odds and against the support of Biden, Pelosi, and Clyburn.
Yeah. Well, Well, don't forget who AOC beat. She beat the, you know, the Democratic Party head up there in Queens.
That's right.
You know, the guy who was...
The guy who was going to take over Pelosi's job, maybe.
Right. I met him. He was here in Scranton with Matt Cartwright. You know, and then, of course, that we had that issue where the Bishop of San Francisco said he would not give Pelosi or not allow her to take communion. Getting involved in that.
Yeah, she made a good response in that respect. She said it's none of his business.
Yeah, and she said if you're going to require public officials to adhere to the only adhere to the teachings of the church, then why aren't you doing this for people who will back the death penalty?
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't have a real answer for that.
But there is no answer.
Right.
These people are not consistent. They're hypocrites. They say whatever it is they think will make the case at that moment on that particular small spot, a small issue.
The clergy. We're talking about the Republican office holders all through the, there is no.
Look at their response to the murders in Texas this week.
Right. That's what I was just getting into. You know, we're all pro-life, except, you know, for four-year-old kids, you know?
Yeah.
Or fourth-grade kids. You know, then we're not doing what we need to do to protect their lives. But, you know, and they don't have an answer for that either. They're getting questioned on that. They just changed the subject.
Well, they raise gun rights to some sort of mystical, semi-religious human right. In fact, that's what they say. It's a human right. It not only is not a human right, it wasn't even an American right until Antonin Scalia in 1988 decided to read the Second Amendment differently than anybody in America had ever read it in the 200 years before.
Well, the thing they can't answer is, what about the right to life for fourth graders?
Fourth graders need to come to school with guns. It's clear.
But this is again one of those litmus tests that has become more and more and more extreme. And again, the MAGA crowd has outpaced the politicians. They can't go far enough to catch the crowd. In some of the reforms that have been proposed and filibustered or rejected by the Republicans, there's 70, 80, 90% public support for these things.
But you know as well as I know that the Republicans do not think that the mass of the people know enough to make informed decisions, and therefore they shouldn't be trusted with the vote. You know that. They've said that. They say only the minority of corporate people and people with allegiance to the interests of corporations know what's good for America, and they're the only ones who should make the decisions, right?
Yeah, but they then use corporate money to influence the people.
Well, they have to because the people still do actually technically have the vote.
Yeah.
But it's almost technical, right? Abe Lincoln said you can fool some of the people all the time and all of the people some of the time. But the key here is that you can fool some of the people all of the time. Some of the people, 10%, 15%, 20%, can be fooled all the time. And in this world, with the way the election laws are written in America and with the influence that big money plays in America, that's all you need. If you can fool some of the people, and that's 20%, all of the time, which they can, you can control the 80%.
Yeah. Actually, in some issues, they can fool more than 20% of the people. You know, in the Republican Party, particularly, they can control huge numbers of the people to believe that the election was stolen.
That's true. But, you know, if you add up all the Republicans, it's only 26%.
Yeah.
So even if they got all the Republicans on their side, it's still only 26% of the American people, and yet they control the 74% who remain.
Well, it's a neat trick, but they're able to pull it off. It takes a massive effort to overcome that.
It took a massive effort on their part to get there. It took them 50 years to get there and endless amounts of money. And they won't be dislodged without the same kind of long-term effort as you keep making the point.
Yeah. You got to think long-term and you got to, ideas matter and you got to be able to push them.
And you got to organize.
You got to organize.
Yeah.
By the way, you saw with Starbucks, there's now, 100 stores?
100 stores pushed for unions, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You know, one small thing this week, I can't say I was disappointed, but I didn't see your name or my name on the list of people that are being banned from Russia.
No, I don't think I was on the list. I wasn't banned.
You weren't banned.
Putin didn't get me.
The Trump family wasn't banned.
No.
I'm sure John McCain and Orrin Hatch and Harry Reid are really disappointed that they're on the list.
They may be disappointed, but you know they could probably get there on their own without a visa, since they're both, all three of them, dead, and it would only be their ghosts that would descend.
I mean, the issue is how incompetent the Russians have become that they would issue a list with dead people on it.
Yeah.
And but I think that, you know, the Democrats could exploit that, you know, the fact that the Trump family was not excluded. Why aren't they excluded? That brings it back to, you know, the investigations and the things that went on with regard to elections and what have you.
You're asking the Democrats to be a whole lot cleverer than they have ever proven themselves to be, at least this group of Democratic leaders.
Yeah.
You're looking for irony, you're looking for sarcasm, you're looking for a sense of humor, you're looking for an affinity with the average person. These are qualities most of them don't have.
Yeah, they've ceded that to some extent to the Lincoln Project.
To the Lincoln Project, and they've turned over the peace issue to the isolationists.
Yeah. Yeah, and whatever. And of course, you saw Henry Kissinger came out this week and told the Ukrainians they should give up territory for peace.
Well, that's Kissinger. Kissinger's a realist. He has one single approach to diplomacy. It either works or it doesn't work, but he's consistent. And he thinks things through from a consistent viewpoint. And he says, listen, if you don't want to get to atomic war, you got to give something up. That's just that way it works. Well, okay. By the way, George Kennan said the same thing.
So, Kennan was a smart guy.
Yep, Kennan was a smart guy. But Biden and Blinken, they seem to think that there's some sort of victory that they can get over the Russians. I don't know what kind of victory they can get over the Russians or even why they should think that way.
Well
that's a discussion for another time. We've come to the end of our discussion.
Yeah, speaking of victory, this is Memorial Day weekend. My father used to refer to it as Decoration Day because that's what the real name was.
That's what it
decorated the graves.
Yeah.
But we should remember sacrifices that people made so that you and I could run a program like this and our listeners can listen to a program like this.
That's right. All right. With that, we'll see you next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.